The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
The NAACP has just issued a travel advisory against one of the most visited states in the country, Florida. The NAACP's advisory says, quote, Florida is openly hostile toward African Americans, people of color, and LGBTQ plus individuals. And it calls Governor Ron DeSantis and Florida state leaders, quote, hate inspired.
Well, it's raising the consciousness of people across the country. It is making sure that if individuals have to go to Florida, they know to be cautious, but more importantly, to partner with groups on the ground. This problem is a result of an election. It would only be fixed as a result of an election. So we are preparing now for future elections, not only against Governor DeSantis, but other policymakers who hold this point of view. If we don't stop this trend now, we will not have an American that's recognizable 5 years from now. Therefore, we are advising African Americans and others that if you travel to Florida, beware that your life is not valued.
You know, I just took my family to spring break in Florida recently, and I think about all of the folks who traveled there for sun and joy and peace and restoration. And to be reminded that actually this is getting to the point where Florida is about to be a terrorist state to many of us here in America. Certainly as a lesbian, as a black woman, I don't want to have anything to do with the place.
Wow. Sam and I are just minding our own business, flying home from Ohio last night. Little did we know that Florida, the number one vacation destination in the country, it's suddenly turned into a terrorist state, if you can believe it. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. We're back in the friendly confines of our headquarters studio here in Edmond, Oklahoma, after some fun in Ohio with a PAC event, two Celtic Throne performances. In any event, I'll get to that in just a second. You can get to the live stream of this show through TrumpetDaily.com. That's our very own website, TrumpetDaily.com. And don't forget about the growing numbers over at our Rumble station. Just go to Rumble and search for The Trumpet Daily. You can get to the live stream there every weekday morning at 11 a.m. here in the central time zone of the United States. Yes, we did return back to the central time zone last night, so 11 o'clock came at us pretty fast this morning. We do have a little bit of a break today, just like we did yesterday, though. For the second half of the program, we'll be playing another segment from the personal appearance campaign on Sunday. From my lecture there in Columbus, Ohio. And again, speaking of Columbus, last night we had another wonderful performance of Celtic Throne, even though the performers were in a stage that was a little bit smaller than what they're accustomed to, but they had a long rehearsal all through the day and adjusted quite well. We also couldn't use the fog machines because of a hotel that was situated right next door to the auditorium. So that didn't take away, though, from the performance or the reaction from the crowd. We've got more audience reaction in the second segment of the show as well. You'll want to listen to that. People, again, we sat just behind people in the balcony that came from some Irish dance schools that were just, I think, taken aback by, or rather their breath was taken away by the performance. Lots and lots of good feedback, as I say. So we'll play that for you coming up in the next segment. The next show, by the way, is in Washington, D.C. That's at Lisner Auditorium at George Washington University. That's this Thursday at 7:30 p.m. The performers are going to be out on the sidewalk just in front of the Lincoln Memorial on Wednesday, I think probably Wednesday evening, to advertise the show and to do a little street dancing. So hopefully they'll get some passersby that will then go to the show the following evening. And just so that you know, Lisner Auditorium, that's less than a mile away from the White House and Lafayette Park. So you can go to the show. Maybe you can go visit the White House or visit Lafayette Park just before the show, and then make your way over to the Lisner Auditorium at George Washington University. That's this Thursday night at 7:30 p.m. Speaking of Lafayette Park, CNN tells us that there was a very, very ominous attack on the White House, an attack on Joe Biden, on Kamala Harris, on their family members. That's right. We're going to play you the story from CNN earlier today. This is clip 8.
A man is under arrest this morning for crashing a U-Haul into barriers right in front of the White House, and we are getting chilling new details about what he appeared to have with him. Officials say that at about 10 p.m., the truck drove into security barriers on the north side of Lafayette Square's 16th Street. You can see that is right next to the White House grounds. The Secret Service says no one was injured in the incident. Bomb technicians searched the truck, but we are told no explosives were found. What was found? A flag that appears to show a swastika. Look at that. Also a black backpack and a roll of duct tape. The driver of the truck was arrested on multiple charges: assault with a dangerous weapon, reckless operation of a motor vehicle, destruction of federal property, trespassing, and most ominously, threatening to kill, kidnap, or inflict harm on a president, vice president, or family member.
Wow, most ominously. I think his name might be Ray Ray Epps Epps, the driver of the U-Haul vehicle. If you've seen footage on social media, I think he was going about 15 miles per hour when he rammed, I guess is the word they're going to use, but he bumped into the gate. Ray Epps was probably supposed to be there to open the gate so that he can drive on through and go into the White House. This right at Lafayette Park, keep in mind, during the Summer of Love, when they had the riots going on right outside the White House, and they had to take President Trump into the bunker for his safety. And as these rioters were trying to scale the fences to get into the White House grounds, how many of those rioters in the summer of 2020 were arrested for threatening the life of the president or the vice president or the family members? I mean, 50 security officials, 50 Secret Service officers were injured in that attack. This is one guy, and of course, it's just like every other story along these lines. He's a white supremacist, never mind that he's of Indian descent. Just leave that aside. And then, and in fact, CNN in the report had a white cutout, just a white background with the cutout of the perp. And then, of course, the swastika flag. How does anybody even believe these people anymore? What they say? And it's so, like you heard there from the reporter, it's so ominous what's happened now. Chilling details. He's got a flag and duct tape. He's got a flag and duct tape. It really is laughable. Turns out the driver is a 19-year-old of Indian descent. That's what happened. And I'm sure they'll try to play it up for everything that they can. It happened just last night, so it'll fill the airwaves today. But think of it in that report: threatening to kill, kidnap, or inflict harm on a president, vice president, or family member. Think of the 4 years in the Trump presidency when everybody, celebrities and commentators, they talked about beheading Donald Trump, punching. Nancy Pelosi said she wanted to punch him. Joe Biden said as much as well. He wanted to take him out behind the woodshed and beat him up. Threatening the president. Now it's serious. Now we're back to, if you drive into the gate around the White House at 15 miles per hour, then you were trying to kill Joe Biden. Obviously. These people, there was an individual, Sam reminded me this morning, at the PAC in Columbus that said, I really appreciate watching the Trumpet Daily because it just feels like everything that you see coming out from the regime media is just fake. There's just no truth. It makes you think of the verse, John 8 and verse 44. Satan the devil being the father of lies, and it says there's no truth in him. There's no truth in him. It doesn't mind It doesn't matter, I should say, that the driver had brown skin. He's a white supremacist. I mean, clearly, he's got a flag with a swastika. And did I tell you he had duct tape? Yeah, he was trying to blow up the White House, I guess. No explosives, but look, there's a backpack, just like the attacker on the Pelosi home, and some duct tape. So, I mean, the regime, it seems, is getting lazy. They think we're so stupid that they can just cobble together anything with an Indian driver and a little bit of duct tape, and there you go. It's chilling, and it's ominous. I mean, running into the gate, how do we even know he wasn't just lost and accidentally hit the accelerator instead of the brake? Who knows? Who knows? They've got everything that they need, though. You got the flag and you got the duct tape, and then you've got the white supremacist. They know all the details. Anytime it's any kind of violent act or even pretend violent act against theirs, one of their own, they know everything about motive. They know all the details that they need to know to tell you exactly how ominous and how chilling it is. You come back to this bizarre reporting about Florida and the NAACP issuing a travel warning to Florida. I mean, the lady in the montage there says, yeah, we were just vacationing for spring break in Florida, but I'm here to tell you, it's dangerous there. Well, why would you vacation there then? It's unbelievable. Makes no sense. It's totally upside down. Perhaps it's meant to undermine Ron DeSantis' announcement. I think that he's set to announce his run for the presidency. Hopefully it comes off a little bit better than Tim Scott's, but we'll see. We'll see what happens this week. Trump is still way ahead in the polls. But again, coming back to the regime media, listen to this from, I think this too is from MSNBC. They've got the NAACP's guy, Johnson's on there, I forget his first name, but even the left-wing talking head throws some facts at this guy heading up the NAACP. And notice how he responds to it. This is clip three.
On the economic diversification front, in just the last few years, Florida has moved into the number one spot in the United States for Black-owned businesses, and number two for Hispanic, and number two for women-owned businesses as well. When you hear those numbers, what they are saying is, look, African Americans and Hispanics are doing quite well here when it comes to running their own businesses and being able to make money here and being able to live decent lives. How do you address that with this new ban?
First of all, that's propaganda language.
Okay, it's propaganda. At number one in the last time I checked, we had 50 states. So Florida's number one out of 50 for Black-owned businesses. Number two for Hispanics, number two for women. And this guy says is propaganda. He lies. He lies. How do you reason with these people? How do you, as I said earlier, how do you even accept anything that they say? They know they're lying. Florida's filled with Black people, with Hispanics, with lesbians, with gay. Everybody's there, and everybody wants to go there for spring break. But here we learn this morning that it's a terrorist state. You learn from the regime media that it's a terrorist state. And we're supposed to nod along and just say, oh, okay, well, I guess we maybe should stay away from Florida. Listen to this from the BBC. They opened up a new department at the BBC. This is very, very serious. Clip two.
Welcome to BBC Verify. Like you said, we are a team of investigative journalists here at the BBC. We are also a new brand, and we are a physical location above the newsroom in London. And the point of the team, as you said, is to verify video, to fact check, to counter disinformation, and to analyse really complex stories so we can get to the truth of what's going on. Why does this matter? Well, mistruths can cause really serious harm to society and to the people in them. And so we want to show you our workings and really help you understand how we get to the bottom of what's happening.
Awesome. A new department called Verify at BBC. Well, here's the first one maybe you could look into. Is Florida a terrorist state? Is that really true? Or is that misinformation? Come on now. Floridistan. Maybe that's what DeSantis should change the name to. Here's BBC. They're coming to verify, and you can be sure It's just to verify whether or not it's like the clip I played for you yesterday. You know, the swooning media that said you are never to question Barack Obama. You're not to question his character. You're not to question his integrity. You're not to question his intellect. He is a smart man. He reads books. He understands the issues. But with Trump, the other side, you are to question everything. That, you can be sure, is what the new Verify department at BBC will be looking into. They'll be looking into the conservative side, analyzing every single word just to see if there's any kind of misinformation. With Trump, I mean, they kept a running tab, tens of thousands of lies. With Obama, and you see how it always comes back to Jeroboam and Antiochus. With Obama, you are not to question him. Nothing about what he does or says. You just accept it. If the dear leader says it, then you know it's true. This is the worst kind of will worship. Objectivity is completely out the window. It's either you believe him, no questions asked, and that's the way they treated him in 2008. And they even admitted. Hastings admitted. Yeah, I swooned too. Other talking heads admitted. We never vetted him. But that's okay. He's Obama. He's Barack Obama. Meanwhile, look at what's happening to the country. And Joe Biden evidently has gone missing. I mean, he had the trip, I guess, to Ireland and then Japan when supposedly the U.S. is about to default. But outside of that, I mean, he announced his candidacy a month or so ago, and he basically hasn't even been campaigning for anything. And he doesn't have any kind of campaign staff to speak of. You wonder why? This is from AP. As President Joe Biden embarks on his reelection campaign, just 33% of American adults say they approve of his handling of the economy, and only 24% say national economic conditions are in good shape. I mean, the poll numbers are just dreadful for this man, this illegitimate president. Public approval of Biden's handling of the economy remains low in a time of high inflation, a difficult housing market, and concerns about a potential U.S. government default. It says American opinion is also gloomy about Biden's efforts on gun policy and immigration, with only 31% saying they approve of the president's performance on those hot-button issues. So he's, conveniently enough, he's tucked away in the basement again and is just speaking rarely because it's so bad. So bad. There's this other article I have here from Association of Mature American Citizens, AMAC. Biden's non-existent 2024 campaign. His non-existent campaign says since announcing his reelection bid 3 weeks ago, Joe Biden has virtually disappeared. Where is he? Where is Joe Biden? Says the U.S. president has been increasingly invisible over the past month. Aside from an international trip to Ireland, he says further on, as a result, that spotlight has otherwise been dominated by Republicans, revealing a serious flaw in the Democratic Party, one which directly threatens its hopes for 2024. They're not out there talking about anything other than, you know, Florida being a terrorist state and this very chilling and ominous attack on the White House. They were going right after, nice big moth coming in here. There's lots of moths out, by the way, all around our houses, all over campus. I'm not sure what's causing that. Maybe one of our faithful viewers from right here in central Oklahoma can look into that and inform us. But listen to Joe, speaking of why he's in the basement, listen to these remarks. This was while he was overseas, I think, in Japan, clip four.
We should have an open hotline. At the Bali conference, that's what the President Xi and I agreed we were going to do and meet on. And then this silly balloon that was carrying two freight cars worth of spying equipment was flying over the United States, and it got shot down, and everything changed in terms of talking to one another. I think you're going to see that begin to thaw very shortly.
The silly balloon, as he called it, it got shot down, but not until after it had flown all the way across the country, slowly. Then it finally completed its mission, and then Joe Biden started to shoot it down, and then all the weather balloons in North America as well. Remember that? That wasn't that long ago. This is the way this administration operates. It's just like it's popping off firearms randomly at no targets to speak of. Just reacting. just trying to calm things. Now we're, you know, we'll let the balloon do its business. And then when they see the outcry, then they start shooting down every balloon in the sky, including ones at birthday parties, evidently. That was a month or two ago. Then there's this debt ceiling struggle or crisis that's going on between the radical left, who wants to spend trillions and trillions and trillions more. And as I said yesterday, Kevin McCarthy and the Republicans, and there's even still, they're in a good position to just stand firm. And there's quite a few Republicans, as per usual, that want to cave in. But McCarthy, to his credit, is standing firm. And according to Newt Gingrich, he said last night that he feels like the Republicans are winning the argument on the media as well, which is unusual. This is clip 5.
If you look at today's meeting, you look at what's been happening, inch by inch, gradually, the Biden team has come to recognize if there's a default, it's going to go down in history as the Biden default. It's going to end his presidential campaign for 2024, and it's unacceptable. So he's going to have to get somewhere.
Biden, that is going to have to get somewhere. It's gonna fall on his shoulders if he, as Obama once, says, hey, we're not gonna negotiate with these MAGA Republicans. We're just gonna do something extreme, whether it's invoking the 14th Amendment, that obscure clause there, to justify emperor-like behavior, just radical, uncontrollable spending because the dear leader says so. Back to this article about campaigning from the basement. Again, if you can believe it. The problems posed by Biden's age and Kamala Harris's awkwardness and unpopularity have been documented extensively, but one of the less analyzed aspects of how they interact with each other is how they interact with each other. There is, of course, the issue of the succession. Further on, it says, but there's a deeper and less examined dynamic caused by the president's age and vice president's unpopularity. Both have created a climate of political paralysis throughout the Democrat Party. And this is why they're so desperate. Now it's Florida's a terrorist state, and maybe we can focus in on the U-Haul with the swastika flag in it and the Indian boy, the 19-year-old Indian that's also a white supremacist. It's possible. We've seen this before. It's very possible for a person of color to also be a white supremacist. It says further on, late as the end of April, the campaign had only 3 full-time staffers. This is the Biden re-election campaign. And the campaign manager, Julia Chavez Rodriguez, has never run a campaign before. It's like they're setting him up for being removed. Throwing him under the bus, says the result is a twilight zone where the campaign functionally does not exist. The net result is all quiet on the Democrat front. All quiet. As far as campaigning on issues, there's nothing there. But the alarmism, the scaremongering, the cries of racism or white supremacy, I mean, that's coming through loud and clear as per usual. Carrie Lake, by the way, lost her bid. I guess the judge dismissed that case last night. Here there's video evidence of people just rattling right through, one after another, less than a second in some cases, not verifying the signatures at all. That goes on. You have the Dominion suit, this guy that's writing the book on Tucker. That's due to come out, I guess, in July. He's come out yesterday and said that Tucker, yes, indeed, Tucker did get fired as part of the Dominion settlement. So here's Dominion, this voting machine company that no Democrat trusted, BT, that is before Trump. Before Trump, the machines were not to be trusted because they were too easily hacked. But once Trump came along, Dominion became like a god in the world of the Democrat Party. Now they're raking in hundreds. Instead of being investigated for all of the glitches in 2020, Dominion rakes in hundreds of millions from Fox News, and they get Tucker fired. That's unbelievable, isn't it? As I say, one of the PAC attendees said, I look to the Trumpet Daily and don't even look other places because you can't believe anything that the regime media puts out there. It's all lies. It's all fake. Just like that issue of the Trumpet a couple of months ago said. When we come back, we're going to get into feedback from the performance in Columbus and also another segment from the PAC event in Columbus. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily.
What has happened to the United States of America? The wealthiest, most powerful nation in human history is suddenly divided, weakened, radical. The evil in America has grown powerful. The good has grown weak. The honorable parts of American history are succumbing to a direct, targeted, sustained assault. Someone, something is dismantling America's history, purpose, and character.
Fundamentally transforming the United States of America.
Political dysfunction, social strife, economic peril, catastrophic moral failure, fires, attacks, riots, lies. The nation is being attacked from within by its own leaders. Powerful elites in government, journalism, academia, and beyond are intentionally, rapidly destroying what America is in order to make it into something else. There is a reason why your nation is crumbling before your eyes. There is a spirit and a specific perpetrator that is attempting to blot out America. Only America Under Attack reveals that perpetrator and the motive and spirit behind him. This newly expanded book shows you the reason why America has changed so dramatically, so suddenly. If you're confused and concerned about what is happening to America, request your free copy of America Under Attack by Gerald Fleury at thetrumpet.com.
The Trumpet Daily.
There you go, Celtic Throne, this Thursday evening at the George Washington University campus, just less than a mile away from Lafayette Park, across the way from the White House. We'll get to the viewer feedback in just a moment. One of our faithful listeners here locally says that, this is an article from Fox. It says, the conditions are right now the moisture's right. Let me just back up. Video going around online shows a crazy amount of moths in Oklahoma. And then it quotes some guy saying the conditions are right now. The temperature's right. The moisture is right. So there you go. A little explanation for, if you're an Okie, a little explanation for why the moths are everywhere. All right. Two or so minutes of feedback from the audience in Columbus last night.
Do you mind if I get your feedback about the show so far?
Oh, well, that's what we're talking about. It's incredible. The talent is unbelievable.
It's all good. It's all good. I love the dancing. They're just all so talented.
Even the younger kids, I mean, it's wonderful.
Oh, I think it's awesome. I love that you guys have, like, a variety of the kids and the younger kids and the older kids. I like that, you know, we've got different skill levels going.
I really liked it. I didn't know that it was going to be such a young performing group, and they're very good. I'm pretty impressed.
How young are the youngest little girls?
The youngest one now, I think, is 5.
They have such stage presence, though. I mean, they are there and just own that stage. Little bitty ones. I mean, it's amazing.
I loved it. I mean, I love the feet dancing, and I love the streamers. That was so... The streamers were just absolutely magnificent. Such a visual. It was just so visual and beautiful.
Oh, it's wonderful. It's so much energy. It's amazing.
It was really good. It's really surprising and entertaining, and everything keeps changing. It's very cool. I loved it.
Amazing. It was great.
So much fun to watch.
Actually, I love hearing the feet against the floors. I like hearing the
what do you call it, taps, I suppose? Hard shoes. They might call them hard shoes, okay.
It was terrific. It was amazing. It was amazing. I can't believe such young people can dance so well.
Just fantastic. It's just wonderful. Wow.
Fantastic. Well, listen to the audience for yourself. You would think everybody was on their feet, and in their hearts, they're on their feet without a doubt.
It's great to have children of all ages continuing in the tradition of the Irish dancing.
Thank and the you. Traditional instruments, Irish bagpipes.
Yeah.
With the, yes.
To me, it's just totally awesome. The crispness, everything is just awesome.
Oh, it's wonderful. Very enjoyable. Great. I don't know how in the world they do it.
Very similar to every other place that we've performed. That's the reaction coming from the audience. With that, we will finish off today's show with another segment from the Personal Appearance Campaign on Sunday in Columbus, Ohio. This comes from the latter end of my lecture. Take it away, guys.
Isaiah chapter 1. What we want to guard against is that spirit of complacency when God intervenes to save even the name of Israel, to give us one last opportunity to turn to Him in repentance and faith. We want to take advantage of that opportunity and not slip into a spirit of complacency when things are good or maybe a little bit better. Right now, it's pretty bad, and that's why people are searching. But when it turns good for just a short time, take advantage of that opportunity to turn to God in repentance and faith. You can do it. If God is with you, it's possible. Isaiah 1 and verse 3, it says, "The ox knows his owner and the ass his master's crib, but Israel does not know. My people does not consider." Even, as Mr. Armstrong said in Mystery of the Ages, I mean, even cows that roam the streets of India, they know where to go at the end of the day. They know where their owner is. And yet the people of Israel don't know their maker, their creator. They don't know God. They won't know God. They won't bring God into the center of their lives, their families, their everything. Verse 4 says, "Ah, sinful nation, a people laden with iniquity, a seed of evildoers, children that are corruptors. They have forsaken the eternal. They have provoked the Holy One of Israel unto anger. They are gone away backward." See, God prophesied thousands of years ago. He prophesied of this national sickness that we see. That word for corruptors means to decay or ruin or perish. And in so many ways, we've brought it upon ourselves, this national sickness. Die by suicide, as Lincoln said. Verse 5, it says, "Why should you be stricken anymore? You will revolt more and more. The whole head is sick, and the whole heart is faint." So the sickness, like I say on the program often, it's from head to toe. But it also talks there about the heart being faint. And we've talked so much, too, on the program about just the lack of courage, you know, to really fight for truth, to fight for righteousness. Matthew 6:33 says, "Seek the kingdom and the righteousness of God." Have the courage to stand up for what's true and right, even if there's no one else with you. There's not very many people in this world that will do that. They just kind of want to go along with the mob, the pack, the multitude, the majority, instead of standing up for God. But if you're standing with God, you're in the majority spiritually. America Under Attack, it says, "America's power structures are terminally ill, top to bottom. The government agents are sick. The legislators are sick. The judges are sick. The media moguls are sick. The officials counting our votes are sick." Everyone's afflicted by this carnal human nature. It never ceases to, just when I think, okay, that's as far as they can go down on the bottom with the lies and the deceit. Last week, some of the conservative commentators saying, yeah, they're exposed. Durham shows that they tried to steal the 2016 election, and yet those very same people will say nothing about 2020. It's even more obvious in 2020. But because there's so much sickness and they're so faint of heart, you see, so many people read about what Durham uncovered last week, and it took a while, I know, 4 years for that report to finally show itself. But they look at that and they've completely lost their trust in government. To quote Reagan again, Ronald Reagan, the most terrifying words in the English language are, "I'm from the government and I'm here to help." People know the government's not there to help. They don't trust Washington, D.C. They don't trust the DOJ. They don't trust the FBI. They don't trust all of the bad actors at the top of those agencies. It's corruption through and through. I mean, probably the most devastating revelation from Durham, and we've been waiting for this for years because we knew it. You read about it in America Under Attack. You read about it in the first two chapters. You read about the background of Barack Hussein Obama. And how could America have ever let it happen? They let it happen twice, assuming those elections weren't rigged in 2012 and 2008. Who knows? Who can you believe? Who can you trust? This is from Fox News last week on the Durham report. It says, former President Barack Obama and his Director of National Intelligence, James Clapper, were both briefed in 2016 on reports that then presidential candidate Hillary Clinton planned to vilify Donald Trump by claiming he was colluding with Russia to win the election. So as I said earlier, this is exactly what Schiff said in 2019 about Donald Trump. He's guilty of exactly, or they're guilty of exactly what they're accusing Donald Trump of. So she comes up with this plan to vilify Donald Trump, and of course Barack Obama's sitting there going, yeah, that sounds great, let's go with this. He had already weaponized the DOJ, the FBI. Further on, it says here, Durham found that there was never any information to justify opening the FBI's original investigation, and that the Bureau and the Department of Justice failed to uphold their mission of strict fidelity to the law. I mean, that's a nice way of saying they committed all of these crimes, but we're going to give them a pass. I mean, even to hear Bill Barr last week say that, well, look, I opened that investigation into the Russia collusion hoax. It wasn't a criminal probe. It was just to get to the bottom of the hoax. And he says there in the same interview that it caused immense damage to the nation. All this damage, but evidently no criminal behavior. Evidently it was just, you know, a comedy of errors, maybe? Just a string of tragic mistakes? They always, always, always get a pass. And yet what they project on Donald Trump, I mean, really, the first chapter of America Under Attack, what was it titled? The Swooning Media. The reason Bill Barr can't come right out and say it caused immense damage and Barack Obama was the kingpin, he's guilty of treason. The reason he can't say that is because they swoon. And how do you explain that? Unless you understand truth about the real spirit world. Are Satan and the demons real? Of course they are. How do you explain even the reaction to Barack Obama's election in 2008? When the talking heads would get the tingling legs and that sort of thing going on. Never did vet Barack Obama. Some of the Democrat media members even admitted as much. It's an attack from the devil. Has been from the beginning. Fox News says, as part of its probe, the special counsel's office considered the government's handling of intelligence that it received during the summer of 2016 concerning alleged efforts by Clinton to link Trump to Russian interference in the election. Information described in the report as the Clinton plan. Intelligence. It's a plan from the beginning. It says here in 2020, In a 2020 letter to lawmakers cited in Durham's report, then-Director of National Intelligence John Ratcliffe described the purported approval by Hillary Clinton on July 26, 2016 of a proposal from one of her foreign policy advisors to vilify Donald Trump by stirring up a scandal claiming interference by Russian security services. Ratcliffe added that Clinton's alleged plot would hurt Trump by tying him to Russian President Vladimir Putin and the Russians' hacking of the DNC, thereby distracting the public from the investigation of her use of a private email server. And then together with that, she destroyed the 33,000 emails, obstructed justice, and as Durham also revealed, the people at the DOJ pulled back on the investigation. They gave her a pass on 3 or 4 investigations and then went barreling ahead on Crossfire Hurricane when they had no evidence at all of Trump-Russia collusion. This is another article here. I'll try to hurry through this. It's by Wayne Root. I think he's a radio host. He says, "We're living in an age of mass deception, distraction, and denial, of mass brainwashing. It's all laid out right in front of us, but no one can see it, or maybe no one wants to see it. The Durham report is the canary in the coal mine. It's all Obama. It's always been Obama. Obama's the real big guy. Obama's the real criminal mastermind. Obama was the head of the snake. Obama was the John Getty of the US government, overseeing a massive criminal conspiracy. Obama was the head of the Obama crime family." I mean, that's some pretty straightforward language from a column that appeared just the other day. But that's been in America under attack for 10 years, and people are now coming around to it. It is. It's like a sprawling crime family in D.C., a swamp, as Donald Trump would call it. And at the head of it was the boss, the Don, as they call them. It was Obama's DOJ. Clapper worked for Obama. Comey worked for Obama. Brennan worked for Obama. Hillary concocted the plan to vilify Donald Trump and took it to Obama. Here's one of the few columns that actually says as much. Usually it gets a pass because of the swooning media. They swoon. It says here, "Obama committed treason. And the worst part of all, Obama's still in charge. Obama's pulling all the strings. He's the one calling the shots. He's the ventriloquist speaking for the wooden puppet, Joe Biden. Obama is the real president of the United States, back for his third term." You can read all about that and more in America Under Attack. Further on, this author says that this is all called treason. It's treason. They're traitors. They tried to destroy a presidency, and in fact did in 2020 when they stole the election. So this is all going on in this nation. This is the kind of miserable affliction spoken of in 2 Kings 14. Isaiah 1 here again in verse 5, it says that the sickness is at the top, the head, and the whole heart is faint. See, there's no courage to stand against it. Donald Trump's one of the few that has the courage to stand against it, which is why they want to destroy him all the more. I mean, this next year is going to be, I'm sure, pretty intense. They've already got so many of the mechanisms in place to cheat in those swing states. I guess it remains to be seen if they'll be able to send out 100 million mail-in ballots this time around. Trump's been out there talking about how that we need to win overwhelmingly, so that they can't cheat their way to victory. I mean, what a system, right? How long can this go on? I saw a clip from Mr. Trump over the weekend, just this weekend, where he said, this is the last, I think it was a promo that his camp produced, this is the last fight. Or if we lose this one, it's all over. I mean, those are sobering remarks from the most popular politician in the United States of America, easily. If we lose this one, he says, we lose the country. I think a lesson to take away from this, just to come back to the brief time that we have before Christ returns, if there's this kind of sickness, this kind of faintness of heart, we really do have to pray and beseech God for the strength and the courage to stand up for the truth, to have a fighting spirit. And again, we say this in the spiritual sense. We're not calling upon people to take up arms, but to have a fighting spirit spiritually, to represent God and his truth, to uphold God and his truth. Verse 6 says, for the sole of the foot, even unto the head, there's no soundness from the sole of the foot, but the wounds and bruises and putrefying sores, they have not been closed, neither bound up, neither mollified with ointment. All of these troubles just piling high. Verse 7 says, your country is desolate, your cities are burned with fires. And look, I won't take the time to go into Isaiah 30 and other passages. I mean, you can see it right through the major and minor prophets, verses in all of them that talk about how it's for the last days. It's for the end time. There's a duality in prophecy. Mr. Armstrong brings this out in U.S. and Britain in Prophecy. The Bible is inspired by God, 2 Timothy 3:16. All of it's given by inspiration from God. And it's profitable, as it says there, for doctrine, for reproof, for correction, all kinds of admonition. We feed on it. We must fill up on the truth of God, the Word of God. It's Jesus Christ in print. Just to hit a couple more verses here, look at verse 10 of Isaiah 1. It says, hear the word of the Eternal, you rulers of Sodom. Give ear unto the law of our God, you people of Gomorrah. Just to come back to this point on duality, I mean, this was written long after Sodom and Gomorrah were destroyed by fire from heaven. That's recorded in Genesis 19. And then here's Isaiah saying, hear the word of the Eternal, you rulers of Sodom. It's Isaiah the prophet likening Israel in these last days to Sodom and Gomorrah. Jesus did the same thing in Luke 17. That's pretty strong language. What an indictment against our people. Verse 9 of chapter 3, it says, the show of their countenance does witness against them, and they declare their sin as Sodom. They declare it. They celebrate it. They promote it. They spread it. Here's the United States. I mean, we're the pornography nation capital of the world, right? We just spread that filth all over the world. The show of their countenance. That passage in Luke 17 where Jesus said that in the last days it would be like Sodom and Gomorrah. He also said to remember Lot's wife. I mean, remember that example of Lot's wife where they had to drag her out of Sodom by the hand, basically pull her out, and then she just couldn't let go. Her heart was still in Sodom, and she looked back longingly. That shows how strong the pulls of the flesh are. It shows how strong the pulls of the world are. It shows how strong the prince of the power of the air is. When we make that break from our wicked past, we go forward with Christ and we don't look back. We just trust God in faith. We rely on God's power. We look to God for deliverance. That's how you want to approach, you know, the truth as you read it in the trumpet or at the website or hear it on the Key of David or the Trumpet Daily. Just receive it with glee. Celebrate that. And then pray for God to help you act on it. If we don't, like James 1, verse 22 says, we're deceiving ourselves. Let's look at 1 Peter 4. We'll begin to wind this down. First Peter 4:1 says, for as much then as Christ has suffered for us in the flesh, arm yourselves likewise with the same mind. For he that has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin. See, acquire that same mind. Philippians 2:5 is a good companion verse, but it says that he suffered in the flesh and he resisted against sin and he didn't sin because God filled his life. And Peter says, arm yourself with the same mindset, the same thinking. Verse 7, It says, "But the end of all things is at hand. Be you therefore sober and watch unto prayer." My father makes a point in the Peter booklet that the fact that we're at the end of all things, or that Christ's imminent return is upon us, that's really got to fill us with urgency. Knowing the times, you see, I read in Revelation 12 at the start that Satan knows how short his time is. So we really want to take advantage of these remaining moments that we have spiritually and act on this precious truth. We're facing some terrifying times. We're already staring at them in so many ways. Matthew 24. Let's see what Christ says here in the Olivet prophecy. Matthew 24 and verse 37, it says, "But as the days of Noah were, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. For as in the days that were before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage until the day that Noah entered into the ark and knew not until the flood came and took them all away, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be." It's the same as Amos 6. You know, it's talking here about a spirit of complacency that sets in, and people waiting until it's too late. You know, the doors of the ark shut, and then the rains descend upon them. Verse 42, further down, it says, "Watch therefore, for you know not what hour your Lord does come." Verse 43 says, "But know this, that if the goodman of the house had known in what watch the thief would come, he would have watched and would have not suffered his house to be broken up." So many people today are just oblivious to the frightening, dizzying events of our time. And they just kind of lose themselves in entertainment, sports, gadgets, whatever. They're not paying attention. They're not watchful. Verse 44 says, "Therefore be you also ready, for in such an hour as you think not, the Son of Man comes." We've got to be ready for what's coming. We've got to watch unto prayer, as we read in 1 Peter 4. We've got to watch and pray, as Jesus said in Luke 21. And of course, what he means is watching world events under the lens or the light of Bible prophecy. There's lots of things in this world that we don't want to be watching. We want to shun them. But we do want to watch world events from God's perspective. And pray always. Bring God into your watching. And watch according to God's word as well. I mean, if you read U.S. and Britain in Prophecy and Mystery of the Ages, then you know what to look for. And of course, the Trumpet website, the Key of David, the Trumpet Daily, that's all meant to help you in your watching as well. Let's just finish in 2 Peter. Back to 2 Peter, or Peter, 2 Peter 1, verse 18. In a lot of ways, many of the themes that we're discussing here tonight, they're put to the stage with our Celtic Throne performance as you kind of go through. I mean, it's obviously built around God's culture, godly dancing and music, but it also does just give you this clean sweep through Bible prophecy and all of the turmoil that this world is about to enter into. And then the beautiful ending with Christ's return and hope beyond the here and now. It's a wonderful production, and we'll talk more about it here right at the end in just a moment. 2 Peter 1 and verse 18, it says, "And this voice which came from heaven we heard when we were with him in the Holy Mount." Peter's talking about or reminding himself of this vision of Matthew 17 when he actually got to see a vision of the kingdom. That really impacted his life, his ministry, his teaching. And Peter says, we have also a more sure word of prophecy, whereunto you do well that you take heed, as unto a light that shines in a dark place. It says, until the day dawn and the day star arise in your hearts. That day referred to in verse 19, it's referring to the return of Jesus Christ and this day star rising, God bringing light to this earth. As I say, that vision of the kingdom in Matthew 17, it really did have a powerful, powerful impact on Peter's work. It says in the Peter booklet, my father wrote this, how much is this future reality a part of our day-to-day thinking? How profoundly do we grasp it? He says, we must not let the world's faithlessness rub off on us. We're living in a world absent of faith, you know, obedience to God's laws. It's just really turning more and more to anarchy and lawlessness. And as my father says there, don't let that spirit of lawlessness, that spirit of rebellion, that spirit of faithlessness rub off on you. It is possible to be a man or a woman of faith, even in these days that we're in. I mean, Lot's proof of that. Again, God had to give him a little prodding as well. But Lot was living right there in Sodom and Gomorrah, and he had two righteous daughters. So I know it's a challenge out there when you can feel like you're all alone in your receipt of God's truth and feel like you're just surrounded by sin and enemies and filth. But it is possible to stay connected to God and His work and His truth. And I know that many of you are trying to do that, as difficult as it may be.
Three kids.